Hey, AfterBuzzers, we are talking about Lethal Weapon Season 1, Episode, I know what it is because I'm the lone wolf here, 14. And I will see you guys after that opening. Bye, guys.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Dance to the music because I'm here by myself, but it's okay because, look at these lights! Oh, it makes me so happy. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Lead the Weapon After Show. I am your host, Alexis Torres. You can find me all over social media at atorres890. That's A-T-O-R-R-E-S 890. I'm so happy to be talking about this episode because it was so freaking good. Don't forget that since I am alone today, you can hang out with me on the chat. I've got my awesome producer, Mark Donica, up in the booth doing the ones and twos with me, and it's awesome. And definitely check out Kelly because he's doing some crazy stuff right now on our sister network, BHL, Black Hollywood Live, talking about dating and mating and all kinds of cool stuff. But you can catch him at K-A-A, I think it's Chaos J at K-A-A-S-O-J, I believe. I might have said that wrong, but you should definitely check him out because he's always up to some pretty cool stuff. But speaking of cool stuff, let's talk about this episode. So, oh my gosh. Okay, so this episode was called Murtaugh's File. And I was thinking, because I was like, okay, this could be two things. One, I was thinking that it had to do with a past case, or two, that I don't know why I thought it was going to be something really terrible, like he did something really bad and like they had to investigate it in some way, or like something from his past had to come back. But no, it was neither of those things, really. It was mostly just we'll get into it, about the fact that he actually went to go see Dr. Cahill, which I love that we got to see a Dr. Cahill episode. It was so freaking good. So we start off the episode with this guy on a motorcycle, and he's got a GoPro on, which I was like, oh, we're coming back to that later. Footage. And he pretty much was trying to just do a leisurely ride in the beautiful, I'm assuming since we're in LA, it was probably the PCH. If you don't know what that is, the Pacific Coast Highway here in sunny California, which is actually very wonderful to drive through. And there is some douche nozzle who was trying to pretty much, like, swerve, like, him off the road. So, I mean, in my head, when the fact that the truck, like, pulled over and waited, and then he kind of sped by, and then the fact that the truck got in front of him and was kind of, like, going back and forth, I didn't really know where he was going with that. I couldn't tell if he wanted him to, like, crash on his bike or if he was going to do something else. But I liked that our biker, which his name is, where is it? Sean Hawking, got past him, thank goodness, because in my brain I was going, you've got a motorcycle. I feel like you can go faster than this guy, but I'm glad that he was very cautious that he waited until he kind of found an opening and went around him. But sadly enough, that was not enough to get him out of a situation. He stopped to pull over. I don't know what he was looking for, because he was kind of looking out on the horizon thinking that he was away from this person, but I also kind of agree with that, because I'm like, why would you think that this person was trying to kill you? He probably was just on his phone, maybe not paying attention, so I kind of get it. And then all of a sudden he turns around and a car literally runs him over, and he just falls down the mountain, pretty much. And that was it was insane, because I was like, oh, they're gonna cut away from it. Nope, they totally show us again with a car hitting somebody as they're toppling to their death. It was insane, and he was going like full force, so I was surprised that the car didn't go with him. So that was gruesome. But again, that's why I love Lethal Weapon so much, is because they do not cut corners. They're like, oh, you want to see a guy get hit by a car? We can bring that to you on at like 6 o'clock at night. That's fine. So I enjoyed it. I don't know what you guys thought, but definitely throw it in the chat. Thank you, Mr. DCell09, Billie Jean Girl. And I always feel like I always mess up your name, but Ariane. I'm gonna miss
Ariadne.
It. Thank you. Also, that was Mark. For anyone who's just joining us, hi. But this next part, I definitely want to get everybody's insight on this, because I, as a teenager at the time, I totally was in Rihanna's shoes, where I was like, my mom is the worst. So Mr. and Mrs. Murtaugh were, let's say, Marvin Gaye and Getting It On, or at least about to. They had some little bit of music. The mood lighting was right. They were kissing and everything. And they were talking about like how the baby's put to bed, and that RJ was, I think, at some sort of retreat or something like that. If I said that wrong, go ahead and put it in the chat so I can see it. And that Rihanna was at Amanda's house. And then I think it was Mrs. Murtaugh who was like, oh, I thought she was at Bethany's. Well, it doesn't matter. They're both the same, right? And I love it because in my brain I'm going, wait a minute, that's kind of fishy. Like, why would you have two different names? But I was thinking maybe Murtaugh maybe just couldn't remember.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, the girl's name, but they both were kind of like, I can't continue loving you right now because I need to find out what's going on. So they pretty much wait until Rihanna gets home and they're waiting for her and they're like, so what's going on? We called Amanda's house. She said that you just left. And then we also called Bethany, also said you just left my house. And in my brain, I'm going, girl, if you're going to lie to your parents, I don't condone this, but if you're going to lie to your parents, stick with a story. Don't pick some random girl. Think of one girl, just one. Stick with Amanda. She would have obviously lied for you, clearly.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only. Thank you. Do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.
Thank God. Also, hi, iTunes listeners. Come on, you know? Again, That's just my little tidbit of just like, if you're going to lie, do it correctly. But at the same time, she was like, well, how, like, you guys called my friends? And I'm going, okay, parents are supposed to know who your friends are, their phone numbers, and obviously, like, where they live. Because if there's an emergency and they can't find you, like they did today, or tonight, technically, that was. They're calling to make sure you're all right and not gallivanting the streets of L.A. Because, I'm sorry, I would do that if I had a kid. Sorry, future teenager of mine. But they also did kind of like LoJack, where they GPS'd her phone so that it can track her wherever she goes. But in my head, I'm going, if you did that, wouldn't you know where she was, technically? But we didn't get that. We just kind of passed by it and just... She was just upset. But I love how Rihanna sat there and was just like, I'm very disappointed in both of you for looking in my phone. That's an invasion of privacy. I'm going upstairs because I can't look at you right now. And she walked away. And her parents were just like... what just happened? So my question to you guys is, either if you are a parent or not, or if you've ever been in her shoes before, is snooping okay? Or is it like, no, you're supposed to let your kids, you know, roam free, free spirits, all that kind of stuff. I'm kind of in the middle of it because obviously if my daughter lied to me about something like that, I would do what their parents did, where I would call their friends and find out like what's going on. But because I'm a gullible person, I would have been like, oh, maybe she was at both their houses today. Oh, I don't know. But Mark, what do you think? If you're up there, if not, I will read stuff from the chat.
I took the wrong channel.
It's okay.
I'm of the paranoid camp. Like, mm-hmm. There are times when my wife is just like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm coming home from work at this time, and I might stop off, whatever, and it's like a half an hour after she said she was going to...
Mm-hmm.
And I check, like, Facebook, I check Twitter, see if she's like, oh, maybe she checked into a thing.
Yeah.
But when it would come to parenting, I would be so much more on top of
that
stuff.
Yup.
Dude, I don't blame them for doing what they did. If I'm paying for that phone...
It's going to have GPS on it.
Well, not just that, but it ain't your phone.
True.
You know? Like, it's all conditional.
Yeah, because she is under... I think she's 15, 16 years old, I believe.
Is she an adult?
No, that's what I'm saying. Because the oldest, I believe, is RJ. He just turned 18. So I'm assuming that she's at least 16, 17 years old, at least.
Yeah, no, that she's on my watch list.
Yeah, no, because, like, she's a minor. Like, that makes sense. Billie Jean in the chat says snooping always backfires. I do agree with that, especially if you have a teenager who's a daughter of a attorney and... or district... I think she's a district attorney and a cop. Like, that's... You made a super child there. I don't know what to say there.
Even though you're born into that, you got to know what you sign up for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in my brain, I'm going, if my parents were not cops, they work in insurance, but, like, they were also rambunctious teenagers when they were younger. So even if, like, there was a hint of a lie, they're like, wait a minute. So
and I would listen to Obi-Wan when he said, in that case, be extra careful.
Right?
Like, that doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it's just, it's rough. But I'm about to get into we might as well do all of Rihanna's stuff now, because the majority of the story is a little bit more deeper than this. But Rihanna pretty much was out. I don't believe we knew where she was, but this is the second, I think this is like days later. And Mrs. Murtaugh had laundry in a basket, and she was walking past Rihanna's room, noticed that her door was open. So, as this is my mother in a nutshell, she's like, oh, the door is open? That it's my house, so I'm going to walk in here and do whatever I want.
Totally agree.
Yes. So, of course, as a teenager at the time, I was like, that's my room. How dare you? But as an adult, I'm like, my mom pays bills for this house that I use, so... I get it. She's a lawyer for defendants, I believe. Thank you. So pretty much she puts the basket down on her bed. She starts snooping in her desk and she finds a fake ID. And of course, red flag. I'm like, my baby's going to club. She's like 16. But like, you know, that was kind of, for some people, that was like a thing. And I was definitely not one of those people. I was usually at home playing video games. So that was me sneaking out was trying to go to a premiere of a movie, or me sneaking out was trying to go to like a con or something. Like that was because my parents were always like, no, you're supposed to stay home and do your studies. And I was like, no, I want to go to Comic-Con. So I would just do that because I'm a dork. But she... pretty much Roger comes in and he's like, what are you doing? And she's like, I was putting clothes away, you know. And he's like, in Rihanna's desk, that or like her homework desk, that's weird. And pretty much she showed the ID, and as soon as they're like about to maybe put it away or even like question it, Rihanna comes home and they run into the closet and wait. But of course, any girl's going, okay, if the basket's in here and I hear people clearly whispering, even though it was very loud whispering. She opens the door and she's like, what are you doing in my closet? And they were trying to, like, at least Mrs. Murtaugh was trying to play it off. Like, Trish was like, well, you see, what had happened was, and then Roger in very Murtaugh fashion was just like, what is this? And she's like, I got a job. And they're like, what? And she's like, I got a job. I work with a DJ. I help him out with a few gigs, and I DJ myself, and that's kind of what I do. But I can't get into the club without an ID, because the age that's on there says 1995. But I'm assuming she's way younger than that. So that's also kind of like, what do you do in that situation? Are you mad at her because she got a job and she's trying to make money for herself, even though she's going through illegal ways, kind of, to do that? I don't know. And or do you do what the Murtaughs did, where they were very happy that she has a job. They just didn't know what to do with the fact that she lied about it. It's a weird, I don't know. I'm proud of her because at least she's trying. I just wish that it was a different job where she didn't have to go get a fake ID, that if a cop found out and she clearly doesn't look like she's over the age of 21 or 18 or whatever, that she could get in trouble. So I don't know.
Do you think we're going to see that pay off? Do you think that that's going to happen?
I'm scared because RJ has already gotten in trouble because a friend of his was a valet, but he was actually boosting, like he was taking cars. Like,
see, now that's like super illegal?
Yeah. So I was like, okay, this is not as bad as RJ's friend. And RJ didn't know about it, so he was driving a car that was stolen, technically.
Yeah.
But he didn't know, so like I couldn't get mad at him because he was just hanging out with a friend. Her friend was like, oh man, I gotta take this car back because I have to go somewhere. Do you want to take it back? Or actually, I think he left him on the side of the road, so RJ was like, I don't know what's happening. So like, it's just because it's also LA too, and she's in a club scene, so I'm also worried about that too. So I'm like,
But you also know the LA job scene where it's like, you have to have so-and-so years of experience.
Right?
So starting this early is something that a lot of people, like, the generation before us got a chance to do before all the, like, employment laws. So while it is like, it's probably bad that you're probably going to get caught.
Yeah.
She's not doing anything super dangerous. True. But I agree with you. If she goes into more and more dangerous clubs, then it could be a problem.
And I'm also thinking as like a girl, like a, I mean, I'm hoping that this, the person that she is working for, the disc jockey that she is working for, you know, walks her to her car or, you know, waits for her Uber to get there or whatever she's doing to get home. Because I feel like if she is working to these crazy late hours, I'm assuming not too late, because then I think her parents would notice she's coming home at 2 o'clock in the morning, but like at least if she's working till midnight or something, that it would be kind of scary for a girl to be walking, because you and I know how LA is after a certain hour.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I would be scared if my 15-year-old daughter or my 16-year-old daughter is just kind of walking around by herself in LA, in especially in Hollywood area, which is where most of the major clubs is. But the club that we saw at the very end of the episode was a library, so it felt like maybe she was in downtown LA. What's that bookstore? the last bookstore, if they were having like a club day or something like that, I can see, or club night, that maybe that would be okay because it's in a very well lit area. But I don't know, because I don't know.
And there are also plenty of areas in LA and the surrounding area that are like all ages places.
True.
Younger people get a chance to play, younger people get a chance to attend, and yep. There's, like, no booze or anything.
True, and yeah. It didn't look like that was that type of place. I mean, we didn't get to see it, but it would look like there were mostly young people in this club.
Yeah, or you go to a place with a lot of... Yeah, there are plenty of places to go, so I figure this can just be
one of those.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. But that was, like, my main thing was, like, I was between a rock and a hard place on that one because I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad that she's trying to be independent and trying to find her own job because RJ's going to college and she needs to find her own thing, you know. And so I was glad that she likes DJing. I think that's awesome. But I was just like, oh my God, you poor sweet child. Don't go out there at night. It's dangerous. But like, that's just me. But speaking of dangerous, oh my God. So we find out that this guy... Sean Hawking, our victim, was actually dating our beautiful, adorable, awesome, I can't think of other adjectives to describe this person, Dr. Cahill. And she pretty much, we kind of knew that she was dating somebody before, or no, right after we found out who the victim was because of the fact that she got flowers. And it wasn't like typical, like, oh, I picked these out from a grocery store. Like, no, someone obviously sent these. A card comes with them, and Riggs picked up on that very quickly. She was also very tired. So, you know, must have been a late night. So I was really glad that we got to see that. I know a lot of people who are Riggs, Cahill shippers, which I don't actually know what the ship name for that is. Riggs Hill, maybe? K Higgs? I don't know. Is probably like, oh my God, no, she's dating somebody. But I love that we kind of got that ship a little bit in this episode, which was really, really nice. So, yes, we find out that Sean Hawking obviously didn't make it. We have a newbie on the team, which I did not write down his name, so if you know his name, please say it in the chat, because I don't remember, but he had a hard time publicly speaking, he was a little awkward and things like that, and I was kind of like, huh, that's weird. But at this point, we already kind of knew from the previews from last week that we had a stalker situation, but for some odd reason, even though I was like, oh, he's a newbie, he might be the stalker, I kind of just pushed it to the back of my brain, because I was like, well, I don't know, he can't even talk, like, two people, so maybe, I don't know, so I just kind of was like, I'm gonna put a pin in that for later, but I was mostly distracted by the next character who was introduced, who was also new, and I was like, curse you, Lethal Weapon writers, for distracting me with a bait and switch. We get to the point where Cahill's having a hard time because obviously she's been dating Sean Hawkins for about a month now, and so it's a little hard for her to get the details that that he passed away from somebody who's clearly trying to kill him. And so she was wondering if, or they were wondering if maybe she got mixed up in some very, you know, some terrible stuff, which was not true, to a point. And we get to see again that awkward moment between Riggs and Murtaugh, where Murtaugh's trying to like give the tissue box, give it to her because she's crying and wiping her snot on her sleeve, and Riggs just kind of like is just holding the tissue box, and he's like, okay, well, you take your time, we're gonna go and we're gonna figure this out, and he like was about to walk out with the tissue box, and she's like, Riggs, can you just leave the tissue box? And I was just like, what is happening, get it together. But I did forget that we oh, there it is, Jason Montero, thank you. That as Riggs was leaving Dr. Cahill's before she found out about the news about her boyfriend, that he saw Roger, I don't know his middle name, but Roger Murtaugh's file in her cabinet, which means that he had to see her for some situation. So, of course, Riggs being nosy was like, I need to know why. So, so that's kind of like a playing theme throughout the episode, is just him poking and prodding Roger and being like, what is it? Tell me what you did. I want to know. I love that Billie Jean in the chat's like, give it, just yelled the TV screen, give her the tissue box. And I was like, I was the same way. I was like banging on the table. I was like, just, it's right there. She's not even that far away. They were able to get footage off that GoPro. That GoPro came back. And sadly enough, it wasn't a lot of footage that they could get back because of the crash, but they were able to get enough. But the thing is, Cahill was supposed to have a day off. She came back And, well, she wanted to sit in and watch the footage, which is hard for anybody. That's usually it's not very much recommended that you see someone that you're obviously with. You probably shouldn't see their last few moments. That's oof. But I'm glad that she was strong enough to try it, but it just wasn't enough for her, and she went home. I also like that Riggs can actually be on a certain level to a point with Cahill now, because even though Cahill's relationship was only a month, and his with his late wife was much longer than that. But I love that they're kind of he's trying to help her through this loss in a very awkward Riggs way. So we find the license plate number from that you know, zoom. Because, I mean, I understand, Mark, you know about GoPros. Like, the footage is clear, depending on what kind of GoPro you have. But do you think that you'd be able to get a license plate number from it?
Depends on how close you get.
Yeah.
And, like, if it's in it depends on how good of a GoPro.
Well, he was on a motorcycle, and he was, I mean, the car was kind of pretty close in front of him because he was trying to cut him off. So I'm going to say maybe.
I would say possible, not very light. Like, it has to be super specific.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing was the picture wasn't completely clear, but you can definitely tell out the letters and numbers from that footage. So I was kind of like...
Yeah, you could probably figure it.
All right, fine. I will let this one slide. But I appreciated that they at least blurred it. Because, you know, like, there's some times where, like, you're watching a crime show kind of like this, and they're like, oh, zoom in, enhance. Zoom in, enhance, and I'm like...
That's my favorite joke from Reno 911.
Right? And I was like, guys, you guys were like miles away. So the fact that you can see that so clearly, get out of here. That's insane. But this one, at least the writers and the crew was correct, where they're like, you should blur it a little bit. Just make it look like it's like, maybe like 460 resolution, maybe? Or, you know, wait, 460 or 360? What am I thinking of? Anyway, it doesn't matter. So pretty much they found who owns the car. They went to the house, and it looks like no one's been living there. It looks like an abandoned house or a house that's for sale. And they find a camera, and it's pointing right into Cahill's house. And you're like, oh, snaps, we got a stalker. So they go through all the kind of the same clues as much as they can. They try to find out who owns the car, who's been there, who knows her well enough. And this is where stupid Dr. Levinson comes in. So Dr. Levinson is a doctor, is another psychiatrist that works with cops and other people. And apparently he's just a nosy person. So for some odd reason, I mean, again, this was that bait and switch where we're like, we're going to give you this creepy character to make it look like he's super creepy. And this is the person you're supposed to be paying attention to. And I totally was on board with that. Cause I was like, this is the guy. He doesn't like Dr. Cahill. He's trying to take over the business. I mean, not really, but that's what it seemed like, because he was pretty much just kind of like pushing her out of her own office, and it was insane. But it also made sense because of the fact that it could have been an old patient of hers, which we were correct. I'm trying to go through everything, but yeah, I literally wrote in my notes, Dr. Levinson, he has to be the stalker. Maybe, question mark. But then we also found, actually, this is where my red flag number one was, when Dr. Levinson goes, oh, I've only been here for a few hours, but I already found your culprit. His name is Kevin Flynn, and he's a hothead. So he's been threatening her for years or days. So Riggs and Murtaugh go to Kevin Flynn's house. He is a spry dude. I don't know how anybody else felt about this, but holy crap. It was insane. He was pretty much just immediately like, I hate Dr. Cahill. She is a terrible person, and I wish she was dead. Like, the things, Mark, if you were there listening to the things that he said, it was insane. He, like, wanted her to, like, he hopes that, like, he wanted to go over and tell him, like, she's a bitch. This is a quote. And was like, I want to choke her, and this and this and this. And I was just like, oh, my God. And
terrifying.
No, seriously. And the fact of, as soon as they're like, okay, well, clearly you have motive, so we're going to arrest you. And he immediately starts swinging at two cops, by the way, two detectives, not even just like regular LAPD cops.
Definitely a normal person with a normal brain function.
Yeah. So clearly, but the thing is, what was crazy to me was that at one point he gets hit with, you know, when you're bench pressing, the weights that go on there, they're pretty heavy depending on the kind of person you are.
Yeah, they can be up to 25 pounds a piece.
He got hit in the back of the head with that, stood up and started swinging, and Murtaugh used it to shield him, and he punched about three times and nothing.
That is a thick skull.
That's what I'm saying. Like, even his, like, I'm sorry, if a normal person who probably, you know, especially like myself or anything, even I've been a martial artist for a long time, if I punched a weight, like a metal weight, yeah, my hand would be broken, but he continued to punch it anyway. It was crazy, and he was just jumping around. He was the spryest dude I've ever seen in my life. It was crazy. But we find out that it wasn't him who did it, even though he is a hothead and he has problems with his anger and things like that. He was actually taking care of his Nana. And so he's mostly upset that Cahill sent him to jail for whatever reason. We didn't really get the backstory on that as much as I can remember. And it just sucked. But I'm glad that he has a heart and that he does care a lot about his Nana. Not enough to the fact that he actually didn't go through with his threats. It's more of just a lot of hot air is what my grandma would call it. So we push him aside. But then they take Dr. Cahill back after this interrogation. And we find someone lurking in her house. And guess who it is? Her ex-husband. So I love how we, especially with Kelly, he always talks about how, Riggs and Cahill are going to get together. I mean, she's single. And I was like, well, now we know that she's single. One, she was dating someone. Two, she did have a husband who apparently cheated on her with somebody in Vegas, is what our backstory was. But I love that. Riggs punched him and pretty much she was like, I give you permission to shoot him if he comes back here. And he's like, she never gives me permission to do anything, so you must be special. Bradley. So yeah, and which was, he became obviously a top suspect because of the fact that that's the ex-husband. So he was technically going to be the second victim because he got a text from Dr. Cahill saying, meet me in front of the city hall. She did not send that text. And some dude pushed him in the middle of a busy street. He hit his head on the concrete, and looked like a delivery truck or something was about to run him over. But Riggs slid on his bare knee on asphalt and shot the truck. I think he shot the air out of the tire or something like that, and the car stopped in time. Like, it's just that much. And so they obviously ruled him out. So at this point, I was like, okay, it could literally either be Dr. Levinson, because it happened right as Dr. Levinson was leaving the office going, oh, it's very interesting reading both your files, and like left. And I was like, huh, what a quinky dink. But sadly enough, I was incorrect. So we also get to learn of why Murtaugh went to go see Dr. Cahill, which was the fact that him, Avery, who's the captain now, were on a standoff with somebody from, I think it was a drug bust, I believe. I forgot to talk about that. Sorry, before we get more into Roger and everything, our spry guy, Kevin, he punched Roger, twice? That was insane. It's so petty, but I was here for it. Yeah, no, that was crazy. So Roger and Avery were on a standoff with one of the suspects that they were dealing with at the time, and pretty much they have a signal where they tap. Two taps on the shoulder means shoot the guy. And sadly enough, Murtaugh didn't feel comfortable and he froze. Luckily, they were still able to get out of it unscathed, I believe. But it affected him so much that it was starting to become a problem with him on a personal level, on an intimate level with Trish. And so he went to Cahill to talk to her about it, which was great. That's definitely something that you should do if you're in a very tense situation like that. And obviously if you're going through something with your relationship. So I thought that was really nice. I definitely thought it was going to be something more darker than that. I'm kind of glad it wasn't. It was very Murtaugh of him. And he finally opened up to Riggs after we got our cute little, not love scene, but it was as close as we'll probably get to a Cahill Riggs relationship for now, where Riggs went to go follow her to make sure she was okay. She invited him in for dinner, not into the house, into the like her favorite restaurant. He was complaining about chicken parm when at the start of the episode, how he had a soggy chicken parm, which, mind you, that is the worst. No one should ever get soggy chicken parm. That just ruins your day. I have to agree with that. I love chicken parm, so if anybody gave me soggy, just not like it's not crispy, you know.
Kill them.
Yeah. No. Well. Okay. Maybe not kill them. I might be a little far.
I'll fight them.
But no,
I'll give
them
a good clean cluck across the noodle.
Yeah. No. That makes sense. I'll take that. I'll fisticuff. I'll do it.
One cuff.
Just one. But yeah, I totally get it, because I mean, it's supposed to be something that's, you know, it's one of those things that like you had a long day, you want, you know, noodles, chicken parm, lots of sauce, lots of cheese, and crispy. Not something that's soggy and gross. So I totally understand where he's coming from. And he had chicken parm that she ordered for him, and which I was like, oh, cute moment number one. She reaches for his hand at one point, and I was like, oh, what's happening? And she pretty much was like, we have to act cutesy because he might be watching. And I was like, oh. Also, I'm kind of sad that it was a he. I kind of wanted it to be a she just for funsies, but it's fine. And but I don't know who it would be because we didn't get introduced to a new female character at all. So it would be weird if they decided to do that. But it'd be a cool twist. But she's pretty much like, he went after the guy that she was dating. Then he went after her ex-husband. So clearly he's trying to get rid of the competition because he understands that Cahill is needs to find someone better, and he feels like he can fill that spot. He just hasn't had the opportunity to talk to her yet. So that was again my second red flag, where I was like, okay, it could be the officer, but I don't know. Dr. Levinson seems like the guy that could talk to her, but also he can't like say what he really wants to say. I don't know, whatever. So he's like, oh, so you're using me as bait. You do listen. And I was like, ah, cute moment number two. And he kissed her hand. Cute moment number three. It was great. I loved it. They leave together. They kiss on the cheek, which I was like, looked like you guys are going for the big one, but I'm glad that you didn't, because I can't wait for that moment. And he leaves, and pretty much you can tell that he's following them at this point in time, because I think he was taking pictures at the restaurant. And then Murtaugh was also there watching to make sure she was okay. Riggs leaves and drives off, and then someone starts to follow him. At this point in time, Bailey calls Murtaugh and tells him, oh, we found a DNA sample, and it was Dr. Levinson. And then you hear Dr. Levinson, and I was like, I knew it! And I was so excited. Anybody who was reading my tweets, I was like, in all caps, I knew it. But then he got knocked out. I don't know if he died, because we didn't really talk about it. So I didn't know if he was killed or he got knocked out. So if anybody knows, throw it up in the chat, because I didn't know. And we get our dude, Montero. And I was like, oh, snaps. Okay, fine. I mean, I had an inkling, but okay, I want to hear your reasoning, sir. And he pretty much is just, it's a typical stalker kind of episode where it's like, you're not good enough for her. Cause Riggs obviously got back to the house at this point in time. And made it. Since she lives in Beverly Hills, there's certain houses up there, actually all over the place, but at least in the hills, because my aunt has one. It's one of those like gas fireplaces that you have to. It's like it's in a clear box. It's like pretty stones on the bottom. You're supposed to clearly see it. It's supposed to be like this really cool thing instead of like a normal brick kind of fireplace. So it's more swanky. And so he. Jason turns on the Jason Montero turns on the gas like all the way up, and I'm just like, jeez. And he's gonna shoot them, and obviously the whole place will go from I'm gonna read this real quick. He got shot. Okay, so that's what I thought. Billie Jean thought it was a therapist too. Thank you. I don't feel crazy. I thought it was too easy. It was the other therapist, and I was kind of mad the writer seemed to go that way until we saw the rookie. Yeah, I'm not mad that we didn't have the therapist do it, but like because we were getting so pushed towards it, I was kind of like, okay, this makes sense. Sure, but no, I like that it was the rookie because the fact that we didn't really get much with him, which I think I talked about that a few weeks ago before the break, that they always pick a character that you don't get to talk to, or you talk to a little bit, and it usually ends up being the killer in some way, shape, and form. So definitely on the nose on that one, and I'm sad that I didn't really harp on that, because he literally only had a line, actually, and that was about it. But the thing is, we also saw him a lot, because I think at one point he does come in front of the elevator, or he's coming out of the elevator and she's going in, and it looks like he's like not even paying attention to her, but at the same time, why did he need to be there? It could have been any extra that could have been back there. So I was like, should have caught that. I didn't think about that until the very end of the episode, and I was like, dang it. But yeah, so pretty much he shows up, they're on a standoff, and he's like, you know, Riggs is trying to talk him down and let him know that this is dumb and everything, but also at the same time, they're actually not dating. But at this point, Roger has the sniper ready, especially after we just talked about the fact that he froze trying to kill somebody, and Riggs was talking about on the phone that he's like, we don't have a signal, and he's like, well, because you usually end up shooting the guy, so I don't really need to. We should have a signal that says don't shoot the guy. Oh, sorry, I'm reading the chat. Well, if the therapist wasn't dead when he was shot. Yeah, so anyway, so pretty much we get to the point of they shoot, or he shoots as they're jumping out of the house. The thing catches on fire, and we pretty much don't get to see our guy. I think, I'm assuming he's dead. And then right after that, we get a nice part where Cahill's like, I can't be your therapist anymore. And we're like, oh my God, this is terrible. We don't want that. But then Mark actually had a good idea, because he chimed in at this point where he was like, no, this is perfect, because then they can date, because she's not his therapist anymore. But then at the very, very end, we get...
Oh, look, he's trying to kill himself.
Yeah, it was rough. And I was like, what? What happened? And so pretty much she's like, fine, fine. It's okay. You can be part of my sessions now.
What did she call him? An emotional terrorist?
Yep. And I was like, yikes. But that's actually kind of what he does to get his way, to be honest. So pretty much he gets off the ledge, thank God, and says that I'll be your therapist again. So I'm kind of like, no, but also yay. So I'm again rock in a hard place. I'm happy that she's there to help him, and at the same time I hope that maybe they'll date eventually. But there's, we find out next week that we get pretty much a, I can't remember the actor's name, but we got a special guest, and he's pretty much playing this guy who witnessed a murder, or they're trying to kill him, and they have to pretty much help him, and he's terrible at it. He seems like a bad luck Charlie. Was that the meme back then? I don't remember. Where pretty much he's just always just wreaking havoc, and I'm very excited to see a more funnier episode. Like, technically these episodes are always funny, but I feel like this one's going to be an actual comedy episode, and more like a very deep, heavy episode talking about loss and new families and, you know, things like that. So it seems like it's going to be a good one to lighten up from Cahill's kind of dark, stalkery past. So I don't really have any predictions for next week. Definitely still catch Kelly and all of his shows and everything at Chaos J. That's K-A-A-S-O-J. Again, if I've said that wrong, I'm so sorry. I definitely want to know what you guys think, because we're short on time because we started a little late. So definitely tweet me at HHorse890. Definitely use that hashtag ABTV Lethal Weapon, or use just Lethal Weapon. You guys know Lethal Weapon HQ always retweets everything and always sends things my way if I miss it. The contest is still going for those two pictures that were signed by Keisha Sharp, who plays Trish Murtaugh. I decided, because I didn't want to announce the winner while Kelly wasn't here, so we'll wait till next week to do that. So you still have one more week. Go on iTunes, rate us, leave a comment telling us how much you love the after show and how much you love the show and what's your favorite moment so far from the season. So I'm sorry I talked your ear off, but I really am happy that you guys were here with me. All of you guys in the chat and who you're going to be watching later, definitely put in the comments below what you guys thought. And I will see you guys next Wednesday for the next episode, because it's going to be awesome. Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.